Also, we want to, so first, we do pledge.
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you.
We have like 5 minutes, so we will continue. Do I have a motion to approve the minutes of April?
Yeah.
Second? Is there any discussion? We're good? Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. So, motion passed. We have the presentation. We have 5 minutes. So,
let me take care of these resolutions, right?
Yeah.
Okay. 186 and 187, right? What are 186 and 187 over there?
Resolution 186 is the amount for Life for Life. The bid has come back. And it came in under our estimate. So the amount is $386 and $36,000 for the construction of the Life for Life in the heart of our home. 187 is the construction of the transportation system or the lead ship. That one came back and was a little bit over our estimate, about $910,000. That is the lowest bid. Keeping in mind, of course, that the estimate that we had originally was about 4 or 5 years old, so to be expected. And so those are the two resolutions for contracts over $50,000.
Okay. Does anybody want to move resolution? Okay. Do you have anything else to say? Anybody else want to say anything about this resolution? No. Okay.
Well, we've been talking about 5% for a long time.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah, we've been looking at these projects for
years. Four. Yeah. Yeah. So, any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. And then we have resolution 187, approving the execution of a contract by Myers Contracting Corporation, Ulster County Community College. Do you have someone move that?
I'll move it.
Second?
Second.
Any discussion? Nope. Okay, call the vote. Anybody? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay.
Jenny.
So we have resolution 204 setting a public hearing on tentative budget of Ulster County Community College for the year 2017-2018 to be held on Monday, June 12th at 6:30 p.m.
I'll move the discussion.
Okay, second.
Are we the presentation? We will be back next month. Yeah,
we'll be here.
So based on the calendar for June meetings, so we'll be back here about a week before. Then I'm also
going to
like I did last year.
Yeah.
Just eliminate everything's out.
Very good. Great. Any other discussion? Second? We already had that. Yeah, we already did that. All in favor? Aye. Okay.
If legislator Salon agrees with the support for the first two, can he sign the result?
Sure.
Yeah.
Great.
There you go. Okay. Resolution 205, amending capital project number 467, Leachfield Construction, in the Ulster.
This is the resolution that I read earlier, just to increase the amount from 187 to 197 to federal funds for the project.
Okay. And any other discussion? No? All in favor?
Aye.
Okay, motion carried. Okay, resolution 207, amending resolution number 55 of 2016, establishing a capital project number 468, construction of Van Rollin pedestrian bridge.
This is a technical resolution. This is to reflect the 50-50 split between the state and the county for the amount to be proportionate equally.
Okay.
Someone
move it? Second? Okay. Any other discussion? Okay. All in favor? Aye. Okay. Motion carried. Thank you. Resolution 209, amending capital project number 465, general furniture replacement for the Elster.
Move it.
Second.
Discussion about that, which not include the trash. For the furniture donated from the Bank of America to the college, the state is going to use that as a tax map. So it's going to save the county a portion.
That book value is $129,000 in change. States going to match that amount. So if we were able to increase the capital with the furniture that the county has access to.
Nice. Any other discussion for you? All in favor? Aye. Motion carried. Resolution 210, amending resolution number 335 of 2016, establishing capital project number 481, technology facility upgrade, SUNY Ulster.
This is another adjustment. The total amount doesn't change. It's just we reflect the split. So originally the county had allocated $50,000, but that's being removed, so that's only $50,000 now. The remaining $100,000 came from the funds of the College Foundation. It's another savings feature for the county.
So the state's using the foundation gift as a match rather than the county coming up with the whole.
Coming up with it. Nice. Can somebody move it? Jim?
Yep.
Okay. Okay. Any other discussion? All in favor?
Aye.
Motion carries. So, did you have anything else you'd like to talk about?
Change the way we do the budget. And it's pretty easy to do that. We have a fixed class. We can project what the enrollment is going to be for the next 3 years. It's not, we hope to surpass that by then. But we still can look at what the state is recommending for our enrollment. So based on the enrollment, that's the only assumption to have. Whether there's going to be X amount of students here, and how much tuition, and what the state aid may go up. Certainly hasn't gone up much in the last few years. But we are able to build a 3-year budget. So next time we'll be.
Now, do you include additional state aid in the 3-year budget?
Right now, we kept it flat because we don't know what the state's going to be doing. But we have enough information to at least provide directional views of where we think that we will be, just for better planning purposes. What enrollment's going to be, we can plan for maybe increasing it or staffing positions, stuff like that. So it will hopefully provide us better clarity and better stability for at least the next couple of years to manage our business.
Good, thank you. So I think it's time for
Thank you. So,
yeah, I just wanted to thank Natasha, who stayed after work today to get this set up for us.
Great, thank you.
I want to apologize.
That's my
fault. Oh, great. So as you might recall, just for the record, last year as we began discussing the cyberbullying law, several of us felt that we wanted an element of education and prevention to be incorporated into the rollout, and I began researching the OLVEAS program because we were looking at several options. And OLVEAS is widely known and understood and reported, for example, by the CDC, the Centers for Disease Control, to be the best practice in the country, if not the world. So I started reaching out to the folks who published the materials and who coordinated training through Clemson University, and Dr. Hooper, who is going to give us an introduction, at which point our subcommittee could then have
follow-up calls with other legislators who are interested in joining us and learning more about what this would cost for the district and for the building. And I also invited Jeff Rindler from LGBTQ Center here because he expressed interest in being a participant in the community committee. And as you'll see from the materials that I've shared with you, one of the key elements of this program is that it's supported by leaders in the community as well, and in fact they can undergo the training so that they can participate in their own activities. For example, the county office buildings could implement the program. An insurance company can implement the program. So it can be community wide, not just building wide or district wide. And these are just handouts to give you some background. Visit the website. There are links that I think Nettie shared with us.
Thank you.
So this is just an introduction for today. But we also, just while we're getting this going, Tracy Bartels and I felt that instead of earmarking the $10,000 that were set aside for a particular program last year in the budget, that we should hold that back and consider where we might spend that, and even leverage funds from the school district, and maybe even together with the LGBTQ Center, because they would be also performing certain in-kind work in terms of becoming very involved in implementing the program.
And we need to cultivate a good relationship with the school districts, because right now
we don't really
have one.
In fact, as you know, several legislators went to visit with the schools, and I sat down with two different school districts to talk about all this. And they're very interested in learning more. So as the subcommittee moves forward, we should have them in on the conference calls.
Maybe we want a light on.
Yeah, so she can see us.
I know.
Yes, I think so.
I see her, but I don't hear her, right?
Or half of the lights, maybe.
I don't have that.
Is that one light
that
can go
on? That
one
on is up. I don't know if that's...
Hi, Ann. Hi, Ann. Can you see us at all? She can't hear us.
She must not see us because I'm waving.
She put together this PowerPoint for us, right? So the each, as I was explaining to legislator Wara while we're waiting, the materials are not very expensive. As compared to many other things, the whole program for our building could be less than $9,000. And it would be ongoing for several years. And to train someone in the district, although there are 100 people trained in New York State already, over 100, so we can borrow one of their trainers to train our buildings. We can even send someone to be trained for about $3,000. So we're not talking about a huge commitment. What we're talking about is a commitment of system-wide change in implementing the program.
And just sign in, please. Thank you.
You're welcome. Well, it's important to me because I think that, first of all, as you recall, last year we had Jess Marcico from to talk about her son who has experienced some cyberbullying, bullying, and I know that it goes on in the schools. And I remember encountering it in
in one of my son's experiences, I think I related that to you, a certain denial that the culture of bullying existed, and I think that's the first sign that you need to start to think about changing the culture. Some people are denying that it even goes on. Or reverse, I think it's okay. Yes, yes. Or saying things like...
Or participating.
Or saying...
Some of the teachers.
Yeah. Or saying like, yeah. Something that my child could never possibly be a bully. Or saying things like, let them work it out themselves. It's...
I'm here now.
Great.
Hi.
Hi, Anne. Thank you so much.
I couldn't hear anything before.
Thank you so much for joining us today. I'm Jennifer. Can you see us?
Yep, I can see a little bit.
I'm Jim DeLon.
Hi, Jim.
Craig Lopez.
Teresa.
Hi.
Hi.
Mary Wara.
David Donaldson.
Anna Jo Green.
Jeff Rindley.
I can say
hey, you're here.
I can tell you the names of the people who are participating later.
Okay, so are you ready?
Yes, we're ready.
Okay. So I'm Ann Hooker, and I'm with Hazelton Publishing, and I'm here to talk to you about the LAS Bullying Prevention Program. I'm going to talk very fast, so I'm sorry, but we'll go through a very high-level overview of the program, and then we'll have some time for some questions from all of you, okay? The LAS Bullying Prevention Program is that a school begins developing a system-wide approach to address bullying in the school so that it's done no matter where your student is at in the school building and preferably in the school district or in your case the whole county. No matter where that student is at, they're getting that same messaging. So they're working on the same bullying definition. They're working with the same consequences. They're working with the same policies and procedures to address bullying. The LAS Bullying Prevention Program is one of the most comprehensive, if not the most comprehensive prevention program that deals with bullying. It is data-driven. It's based on a social-emotional framework, which is real big right now in school and Department of Education, is the social-emotional learning. And the LAS program meets all of the social-emotional learning criteria for schools. It is implemented school-wide, so it's not something that's just done in one classroom. And really, it's about building community awareness as well so that the community becomes involved in the program. I have some communities that like shop owners and places that kids may be hanging out after school or on weekends, they may have a sign in their window that says it's a bully-free zone. Then that student or adolescent knows that it's a safe place for them to go to. The LAS Bullying Prevention Program was initially developed in Norway by Dr. Dan Alvaeus. And he was commissioned by the Norwegian government after there had been several suicides of middle school and high school age students. From that research came the LAS Bullying Prevention Program because it was found that most of those completed suicides in Norway did have some bullying incidents that were related to the unfortunate event. It is the most researched and leading evidence-based bullying prevention program model in the U.S. It is listed on the Blueprints for Healthy Youth Development evidence-based programs, Promising Practices Network of Programs and Practices Proven to Improve Outcomes for Children. It's also on the Clearinghouse for Military Family Readiness. Each year, we do an annual data to show any new schools that started the program, kind of what the state of the of bullying is across the country. And we still tend to find that most schools that are just starting out, bullying is still a pretty big issue for them. When the program is implemented as written, so that means you're following the fidelity of the research that was done A school committee is trained, the students are surveyed, and there's then class meetings that happen throughout the school building. And when it's done, following Fidelity, there's been almost a 50% reduction in bullying. There are lower rates of alcohol and other drug abuse, and there's an improved academic achievement. So the goals of the program are to reduce bullying. It doesn't mean that you're going to, you know, totally eliminate bullying, but it is that you're going to reduce bullying. You're going to hope to prevent any new developments of bullying and also to help with better peer relations at school. So as I said, the LDS Bullying Prevention Program, and we often refer to it as OBPP, it starts with training. There's two types of training. You can have some of your county and school staff people become certified trainers. And then we also have certified trainers. And we do have quite a good cadre of trainers in New York. And I know that Jennifer has been in contact with our LDS state training lead in New York. And what the nice thing about doing with a certified trainer that's already working on the program, a lot of times they've had several schools that they've implemented with, so they have some really good strategies that can help a brand new school in implementing the program. Like I said, we administer the survey. That's kind of the beginning before you actually implement the program. And it is not a pre and post test. It is something that is done annually and administered annually. So typically, most schools are either administering the LDS survey from about mid-October to beginning of December, and then again probably from about mid-February through about end of April. It kind of depends how it fits into the school schedule, and especially with all of the new testing that schools are required to do. They're really trying to work it out so that it's something that the students are taking time to answer correctly and that they are answering honestly and not just hurrying through the results of the test. We do usually ask that you wait at least 6 weeks after the start of school in the fall or 6 weeks after the winter break. Between December and January to administer the OBQ so that you can kind of calm down and get things settled instead of doing it right away because there's a lot of issues going on during those two times of the year. It's really good to have this done, not so much before the coordinating committee is trained, but before the rest of the staff are trained, because it's a way to show other staff that there are bullying issues at their school. So often many teachers will say, well, we don't have any problems at our school. And then you show them the results to the questionnaire, and lo and behold, there's quite a problem of bullying. So it is good to do it before you do all staff training. And it is a confidential report, so students do not put their names on it. We don't know who the students are. So the core program materials include the survey, and then there's a teacher's guide and school-wide guide. These pieces are used during the LDS coordinating committee training as well as the staff training. These lay down the foundation of the program as how you implement it school-wide, and also gives teachers tools on how we implement it within our own classroom, but as a coordinated effort as a whole school as well. Then we have the supplemental materials. The supplemental materials are what are used during the class meetings. The class meetings are something that's done weekly with the students at elementary level, middle school. We hope that they can be done weekly, but we understand that sometimes schedules don't allow for that, so then we recommend that they be done no less than every other week. At the high school, we recommend every other week, and again, there are some, you know, because of scheduling, that sometimes raises the difficulty, so to do them at least once a month. You always do them in the same classroom with the same teacher and the same group of students. And a lot of times I get schools that get really excited. They're like, oh, this is great. This is something our guidance counselors can do. Yeah, no, not so much. It is supposed to be by the teacher because you want to create that community with the teacher and the students in that classroom. So there are guided lesson plans for them. So it's just like if they have another one of their curriculums, it's all laid out for them. There's learning objectives, what they need for the lesson, and also a timing for each of the different activities within the lesson. The two programs on the left-hand side here, the class meetings and the Bullying, are actually video programs, and those can be used. This Bullying DVD, there's a K through 5 and also a middle school 6 through 8. That can be used with students, so there's one video program that's just for students, and then there's a video program that's for teachers and parents. So it's a great way to launch the program with parents or even the community members for them to be able to see what the program is about and what bullying is about and how they can be involved in making sure that it's reduced. There's your middle school, so as you see, it's all the same material, but just different colors. And then they're also grade appropriate, age appropriate. And then the high school is the only one that does not have a bullying DVD, but all of those four pieces are there. And there is a new piece that's a part of all the supplemental materials. There's more class meetings that matter. And the more class meetings that matter include students with disabilities and how students with disabilities are part of the regular classroom and how we need to treat them as part of one of our classmates. So that's it in a nutshell.
Thank you, Anne. Can we have Anne's face back? Yeah.
I can't hear you very well.
I'm going to close the door here.
Can you hear me?
I can hear you, yeah.
Could I ask a couple questions at this point?
Does anyone have questions for Ann?
Yes. I have a couple questions here. First, how long does the survey typically take?
The survey takes about 20 to 25 minutes.
And basically all grade levels do a survey. Is going to be slightly different depending on the grade level, correct?
No, everyone takes the same survey, so it's grades 3 through 12 that take the survey. There are some questions on the survey that are optional, and oftentimes I have elementary schools that will choose not to answer some of the questions, to have some of the questions for their students to answer, because they're like, have you been bullied in a sexual way? So many times the elementary schools will remove that question. Most of the time, my middle schools and high schools will ask that question.
Now, the class meetings that take place once a week or once every other week or once a month, depending on who they are, how long do they take?
The class meetings?
Yes.
The class meetings are meant to be like 25 to 30 minutes for a class period.
And then in the high school, when would they do that? Would they do that in the social studies class, in English class, or?
Oftentimes in high school, they're doing them during like an advisory period. Because most students have that same teacher for their advisory period. And that's where I know they're mostly being done. I mean, they definitely could be done. Like, let's say all of the ninth graders have a health class. They could be done during health class in ninth grade. It just needs to be made sure that wherever they're being done, that all of the students are taking that class at the time for an entire year so that all of that grade level of students are getting the class meeting.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
So, if we were to, Jennifer, oh, you have a question, Jeff?
Just a couple. Hi, thank you for that presentation. Yeah. So, I know you've been around for 35 years. What modules are there in regard to something that we've been talking about in local law that's just been passed in regard to cyberbullying?
Okay. In all of the supplemental materials, there's a cyberbullying curriculum.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a cyberbullying curriculum that's for grades 3 through 5, and then there's a cyberbullying curriculum that's for grades 6 through 12. And again, those are age-appropriate activities. And that is something that can be done and oftentimes is done by the guidance counselor. That doesn't have to be done as a class meeting. It can be done as a regular counseling lesson.
And why is that?
Because that is just a curriculum in and of itself. It's not, the class meetings are an actual part of the implementation of the program and the fidelity of the program. That's what how the program was built. Whereas cyberbullying, it's an issue within bullying. It's not a part of the class meeting or the actual research that was done initially.
Mm-hmm. And how much has the curriculum, has the curriculum remained the same over the 35 years? Has it changed? And if so,
it's changed substantially. So we began distributing the product in 2005, I believe it was. Prior to that, when schools would need to purchase the curriculum, they would have to go to three different entities to purchase different pieces of the curriculum, and one of those entities was to contact Dr. Dan Olvaeus in Norway to get the survey. So what we did was we brought it all under one house, mm-hmm. and we published then, that was 2005, so we literally just distributed what materials they had at that time. And then we actually published the program in late 2007, early 2008. That's when we began publishing it. And then, so we try to do, so like the cyberbullying curriculum was just updated last year. So we try to do a refresh on all of the materials as soon as, at least every 2 years, because like the cyberbullying one, we still had like flip phones on the cover at that time when we first did that curriculum. So that was one that we had to do revise pretty quickly. This DVD, this is the high school DVD. We just actually created this one. I think this one came out 2 years ago. And it was just found out that there was high school research done in the state of Pennsylvania. And what was found out during that time was the interventions in the class meetings really had to have kind of a different feel for the high school students. And also because bullying does turn into sometimes legal consequences when you're in high school. It doesn't always just stay bullying. And so that's when that video program was developed at that time. And like I said, now there's the class meeting, like here, and then we also have more class meetings that matter. So we try to add to the curriculum as well so that people aren't getting tired of things that are happening, but that they're seeing things happen, and that it's teachers that are going to get the most tired of the material and worn out on the material, it's not the students. So we try to keep it fresh so that it's staying fresh for the teachers as well.
And could you explain the connection, this is Jennifer, could you explain the connection between the publishing house and Clemson University and their role in sort of implementing the training?
Yeah. So we are the publisher of the curriculum materials, Hazelden Publishing, and we are a partner with Clemson University, and it's the Institute of Family and Children, and they are the owners of the Olvaeus training rights in the United States and North America. So we own also the publishing rights in North America as well. And so we partnered together to implement the program because we really feel that training is as integral as a part as the materials are. We do have schools that probably implement just getting training, and we probably have schools that just implement buying materials. But when you do that, you're not really following the fidelity of the program because you're not purchasing, say, the material and the survey. The survey is such an important part. And I have schools that after so many years, they're like, well, we don't need to do that anymore. You know, we've been doing this for 5 years. And then all of a sudden, they have all of these bullying incidents happen, and they're like, wait, what's going on? And it's like, well, there was probably bullying happening somewhere. Even though you're doing the bullying program, it doesn't eliminate bullying. And so it's important to do all the different pieces. So training and the program materials are so important together. So we work hand in hand with Clemson to make sure that training does happen and that materials are purchased by the schools.
I'm not the chair. We have a chair, but I guess we're just sort of Q&A.
I'm just wondering, you know, teenagers tend to be cynical, and I'm just wondering, you know, in a nutshell, how do you recommend overcoming that?
So part of it is doing those class meetings, because the class meetings are going to build a connectedness. And the class meetings aren't like all about bullying. They're about like different topics, such as being a friend to someone. How do we respect people that maybe we don't necessarily like? So it's really giving them some life tools to live with and not just bullying lessons. So that's what's important about those class meetings, is it isn't all about bullying. It's about building about character education and building up that student and building connectedness for the students with the teacher and with fellow students.
Great. Sure, one. Go ahead.
I was just wondering if the county invests in this program, do all of our schools have access to it, or would each school have to buy a program, and how much is it?
Mm-hmm. So how we have an online program is how we typically are selling it right now to schools. And so, like, let's say the county was a buying entity. You'd purchase it per school building, and so each school building needs to have a core and the supplemental materials, and it's $1,800, and that gives them unlimited access to the materials for their specific grade levels for 3 years. It's a subscription, and they also have... there are three administrations for the LDS survey that are part of that as well.
So for each building, it's $1,800.
Yes.
Well, when you talk about each building, I mean, the high school is a whole bunch of buildings.
But it is one school.
Would it be counting as one school then? Like the high school?
Yes.
That is one
school. It is just one school, yeah.
There's 600 in the school or 100.
But what about the middle schools? So we have two middle schools. So we have two.
So sometimes if the schools are smaller, it might not be as cost effective for them to do the online subscription. And then we can do the paper credits. I just don't recommend it for like a high school especially, because their year enrollments are usually a bit larger. Sometimes for elementary schools, the elementary schools can be pretty small. So sometimes it is more cost effective to do the paper materials.
How much is the paper?
But say like for a middle school that has 500 students, you're probably looking at around $10,000 to purchase the paper products.
And then the training?
And then the training is to have a certified trainer come in and train the individual schools is $3,000. They cannot charge more than $3,000 per school. And it's independent from Hagelman, so I'm just telling you what I know they can't, the most that they can charge you. That doesn't mean that's what they will charge you. So they can charge $3,000 per school. They can train two schools at a time, and the most they can charge then is $4,500.
And this includes monitoring over the course of the
So the training would be, well, it's a two-day training with your coordinating committee. And then that trainer is there to help you do the implementation of the program and should be mentoring your coordinating committee for 12 to 18 months. And at no additional cost. That's a part of that training fee that you first pay.
And if we were to get someone in our district trained themselves, does that lower our costs?
And that is $3,925.
So if we were, for example, to have a
someone who's committed to helping us implement the program in the district. They could be trained, mm-hmm. and they could essentially train in all the other buildings.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
So that's a way of, yeah, I was mentioning in the beginning, I was speaking with Kim McLaughlin and people over at Clemson about our potential, our ability to have someone trained within the district and then help us implement the program going forward.
Great. And you know, and one thing that it, when you have someone go to be trained, they are also assigned what's called an OTAC, an Obvious Technical Assistance Coordinator, and they help that trainer with their first couple of schools too. So it's not like that person just goes to training and is left real high and dry. They have a lot of support moving forward. So that's one thing that's nice too about having your own trainer, that then you have that person there. And they're able to come in and let's say at the beginning of each school year, you're going to train all of the new teachers that year and you just bring them all together. So that's a really good, it's got a good reason to have a trainer that's dedicated to your school.
Also, as I mentioned to everyone, Ulster and Green County BOCES, the Green Ulster BOCES has a trainer. I've heard that there are a number of trainers in our region. There are over 100 in New York State. So if we were to go with an outside trainer, we would have many options.
And do you have the time? Yeah, many of the trainers will do like consulting with you to really help you kind of build the program, especially with an initiative like what you're looking at. They'll come in and really help you to build that.
And a lot of the New York trainers
have been doing it for so long that they are very well versed in the program and have a lot of great history and experience in implementing the program. But New York's probably been one of our states that's been doing it the longest.
What do the trainers typically charge for their consulting?
Sometimes they don't charge anything. But I don't believe they can charge more than like $75 an hour is what their fee is. But again, they're independent from us, so it just kind of depends. And like I had talked with Jennifer, it's really good if you can kind of connect with someone that is in one of the BOCES. So Kim McLaughlin is one of the BOCES in Genesee Valley BOCES. And she's a great resource and has a ton of experience in implementing the program. So she's a great person to talk to about the program as well.
Great. You know, what I would like to do, because I think there's a lot of information.
Craig would like to ask a question.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, Seth, please. You had mentioned in the beginning of your presentation some statistics that prove the success of this program. My question is, how are those statistics determined? Is it in-house, is it third party, is it by the state?
The surveys?
Yes.
The data? So we contract with a third party. They're called professional data analysts, and they take care of all of the report writing. It's all done independently from Hazelden and Clemson.
I have a follow-up question that was similar to my question. Is it the same survey over the years that the students are taking to track the progress?
Yes, that's the same survey, because each year, so you're doing an environmental scan is what you're doing with that survey. And so they are... each year it's the same survey. It is an evidence-based survey, so all of the questions are weighted within the document as well and within the reporting.
Well, what I would like to suggest is that because the next committee will be meeting in this room, and I know there are probably a lot of questions going forward, would be to give everyone a chance to digest this. And then I would like to schedule a follow-up conference call not only with you, but potentially with the training coordinator from New York State. I think that's Kim LeBlanc, right? So that we can further explore what we might need to know, not just about the costs, but what would implementation really look like? What would it end up being per building if we had our own trainer or if we used one of theirs? And I think we also want to include some discussion about the role that our community partners might play and even suggestions you might have for cost sharing. Let's say, on your website, I saw that there are grants. There are grant resources that are available if you know what might be more effective for us to tap into.
Okay, that sounds great.
Great. And thank you so much for all your work putting this together today. We really appreciate it.
Yeah. Thank you.
Have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Go ahead, Dave.
I think what needs to be done before we do much more with it, I think the school districts through MOSI is most likely would be the ones to make this happen.
Well, we would have to bring them to the table at our very beginning starting.
I agree.
Because if we do not, it's not going to slide.
I agree. This was just intended as an introduction.
Right.
And one of the things that I hoped to do over time, things were going on with the schools, was to introduce the idea of working with either Olbeas or if someone wants to bring another suggestion to the table that we do some comparisons. But I can tell you from my reading and my scan of the literature, there is nothing else.
I'm going to talk to Socrates because they did do this program a couple of years ago and they're no longer doing it. So I put a call into the superintendent, so I have a lot of questions for him about. You know, was it a pilot program and they ran out of funding? Did they find it not, productive or cost effective? What their whole take is on the whole thing.
Right.
And what they might have on the horizon or the plan and what kind of budget they have for this issue.
I think it's important to list the questions that we have, including what budgets the schools might have for this or any other thing. Because as you probably know, DASA is a policy. It's not a program. If we're going to begin implementing anything that has to do with bullying prevention and education, mm-hmm. it's going to be something. There are probably going to be some costs associated with it. So the question is, how do we compare the effectiveness? What are the schools really willing and ready to do? What have neighboring communities or communities done and how effective have they been? Mm-hmm. And what other partners in the community can work with us to maybe even defray some of the costs, or at least we can maybe figure out a way that as a group, by showing a lot of unity in terms of applying for funding, we can leverage some outside resources.
Well, the thing about this type of a program, if you can do it, it's most effective with more people, obviously. It's more effective if, because let's face reality, people move and they may move from Saugerties to Kingston or Ellenville and so on and so forth. And one of the biggest, most difficult thing, and actually those people that are moving, they tend to be the ones that get bullied or bullied because that's they move a lot. So the point is that you want to have the same program everywhere you go. But the thing is in order for this to work, I believe the school districts basically have to say yes, they want to do this, and if we can get all the school districts to do that, I think our role would be, if we feel that this is the right program, or whatever program, I think our role would be, granting the schools maybe half the money or something of that nature. Like if it ends up costing $18,000 for it, we can give them a certain. As I said, when we put the $10,000, I said that's a pittance. That's not going to be really create a good program. You're not going to create a countywide program with $10,000. It's just going to happen.
But we can do something where they can leverage and match. It's an incentive for them to get started.
And Vaughn?
I was just here with the committee. When we were doing the cyberbullying law, I used to talk extensively with both DuPont High School and Highland High School. And Maria Wright, the superintendent. They have programs, but they're very proud of them, they think are very effective. So
I'm not sure. Their big concern was that our cyberbullying, laws and impact the school. And we took the word school as a preface of ours, so I'm not quite sure how you envision this happening, but I don't think the county can tell the school.
No. What are you scoring?
No, I would say, do a grant program. In other words, we figure out a program that everybody's going to like, or if they had a program that the county could grant the school, maybe, we'll say $10,000 towards the program. Say the program costs $20,000. Well, if we can give them half the money for it, it may be an incentive for them to adopt the program, right?
Well, one thing we probably have to do also is find out what programs they're doing now.
Right.
We would have a better understanding of what they're doing and seeing how this may be able to complement that.
Yeah.
But
or
no
we could
way,
even do their
point. Do we want to go in there say, here's this program, when you're saying their program is a power?
I agree with what Harry said. You need to get the schools in the very, very, very beginning so they don't take offense.
And they don't think there's a need for it, they think their program is excellent. Great, and that's fine. You know, just to explain, as an urban planner, I'm trained to start every plan with a scan of what's going on, a discussion with all stakeholders, and then an analysis of what's needed. The reason I brought this was because I was concerned, as was legislator Martel, and I'm sure there were others, that we had decided to fund a specific program at the end of last year in the budget, and we felt that we should really evaluate a number of different options in terms of our role. And I thought it was important to bring something to you which is considered far and away by the Centers for Disease Control and all the literature I've read to be the most effective program out there.
Right.
And I think that's a way of starting and thinking about, okay, so how do we compare that and do some benchmarking?
Right.
So I don't think we're in any rush to purchase this.
No.
Tell anyone what to do.
We need to get ahead of it and bring them to the table and partner with them, because we've had experience before with good programs and different ideas that didn't go anywhere, and a lot of time was spent on it because they didn't feel part of the process.
I agree.
So, And Tracy, did you still want to say something?
I think the last point you heard, I think it would, I don't know if it currently exists, but do we have any analysis of what's being currently done in all the different districts?
I called my supervisor today. I called him, and I haven't heard back from him.
So,
we
do have, that seems like a good starting
point. You're going to have to put together some type of a short survey that we send to the schools and ask them if they would, if we're looking at putting a program together countywide that would not, is not going to interfere with the schools, but we want to know what the schools are doing and if they are using specific programs or not. And I think we could find that out, but something put together to ask them, so they can tell us. I mean, you send it to the superintendent or whomever, whoever the officer is. I'm not sure who deals with that. I'm sure there's the one particular person that deals with curriculum that deals with this type of issue.
I would
and
be very
find
glad
out exactly
to
what they do and what programs they're using, how long they've been using the programs, have they felt they were effective, or are you looking at other programs? I mean, something of that nature, that type of a quick survey that they can do without too much work. I mean, you want to get them in the team, but you don't want to get this thing that they're not going to want to throw out.
Very glad to actually, since I think we probably, we could work in a subcommittee on these things. If anybody wants to join that discussion, we can start out just by emailing and having a conference call and think about how are we going to work with all the schools, what are we going to ask them.
We've got to do it.
And I wouldn't want to shoot it off too quickly before we agree on what we want to find out from them. But I think we can do that pretty quickly if we have this in a subcommittee conversation.
All righty, I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Any other new business? Old business? Well, sorry. There were some residents from the area about the house, the fire.
Oh, okay. That's right.
And they're gonna, it's gonna spill over into the environmental meeting also, but
I'd like to say something. I've been on the railroad 38 years, and Duncan Donaldson was my first foreman on the railroad.
There you go.
Okay. My name is Sarah Fleming, and I'm a cultural resident. And we thank you for allowing us to speak to you on this designated smoke-free campus. You know, our concern is about the proposed fire training facility to down on property owned by the county and, I believe, owned by the college. But we always like to say, and we must say, we cherish our firefighters and first responders. There's no question about that. The only thing we disagree with is the proposed site of this fire training facility. But we also cherish our hard-fought zoning laws here in the town. We cherish the peace and serenity of this part of the world. We cherish the irreplaceable sound of wildlife and the sound of silence. We cherish our potable well water and clean air. Just a couple of points that have been floating out there in some of the meetings that I've attended. One legislator, Chairman Ronk, expressed to a number of us and his committee last week that the proposed fire training facility would amount to no more than another wood stove in the neighborhood. And that's not exactly accurate. Also, the legislator Craig is quoted in the Bluestone Press as saying that there's state and federal monies that are available because the proposed site on Cottrell Road is part of the community college. So there's funding available that wouldn't be available if this fire training were on another site. And today I spoke with SUNY Ulster President Roberts, who reports that yes, state education funding is absolutely available to colleges, and that it's capital funding to improve structures. He mentioned, ironically, that one of the capital projects currently underway with state ed funding here on campus is to change out all of the street lamps on campus to turn them from going directly into the night sky to facing downward. And maybe you don't know this, but from what we've been studying, the fire training facility requires night lights that will illuminate the burning building so that firefighters can understand what they're approaching, eliminate tripping hazards, and this will light up the night sky as well. We've been told that training will take place 4 to 5 nights per week until 9:30 p.m., plus all day Saturday. So some of us have realized that what may first seem like, oh my goodness, smoke and airborne pollution, it turns out that may be the least of our concerns before we get into this proposed fire training facility on Cottrell Road. Noise pollution, light pollution, noise pollution in the form of fire engines. I don't even know the details. The fire engines that have to run their engines in order to get the water cannons to pour onto the burning building. Noise pollution in the form of the equivalent of chainsaws that will be used to cut through metal. This is all new to me. I'm just reporting what I'm learning. Finally, the land itself is unquestionably a beautiful, near-pristine piece of land. As pristine as we think one can find in the county because of the fact that it's off the beaten path and its neighbors include a number of farms, disused farms, but a number of old farm properties, and a spiritual retreat, who I understand the neighbors together, mostly on Leggett Road, have for 30 years or more agreed not to use pesticides on their property, not to even use salt to de-ice in the winter. So this is a really interesting, unique sliver of land. It is home to black bear population, red fox population, barred owl, screech owl, and my neighbors can speak more about that. But we would like to suggest that in accordance with the Marlborough Town Environmental Conservation Committee, which has issued a, quote, statement of concern to the town board, they have requested the town board, and therefore thereby the county, to provide a most rigorous, complete, and independent environmental study to be carried out before any decision is made to site a fire training facility on that specific piece of land on Cottrell Road or, frankly, if they in any residential neighborhood in the county. They also request selection of an impartial entity to carry out the study. So that is not the county itself, which wants to put the fire training facility right there. The Environmental Conservation Committee of the Town Board also recommends alternative sites for the project be sought, with a preference for industrial sites without nearby residents. Okay, thank you very much.
And so right now what we're going to do, we're switching committees.
Yep.
So we're going to make a motion to close this committee and then...
I do want to say something in reference to this. I'm not a planner, Jen is, but I did have the opportunity to take two planning courses as an elective. One of the basic things of zoning, once you learn, one of the courses taught about zoning and how it started and the basic tenets of zoning. One of the basic tenets of zoning is you don't put commercial type of adventures right next to a residential area. This is sort of like a commercial type of venture because you're talking about training or fire training, which I agree we need to have that. But where we place that, it needs to be in places that are not close to a residential area. You want to get it away from the residential areas. I mean, I've seen them, like for instance, in a place that I go to often in Florida called Venice, Florida. They have a very state-of-the-art training center, but where it is, it's behind a group of parks, and in other words, adjacent to a commercial area. So they're able to, it's basically buffered off. I mean, you can hear them when they're working at certain points, which is fine. I mean, the neighbors, it doesn't bother them because they actually have police training in the same spot. So once in a while, they'll hear the guns going off and stuff like that. But having said that, the neighbors were brought in from the very beginning on this. I think they started operating this about 2 years ago. And from the very beginning, the neighbors were brought in, and it made sense, and they set up things that created a little bit of buffer zones. And in this case, it wasn't done that way. And that's, as I think you said before, you bring the stakeholders in from the beginning, and that's the point of planning in the first place. You don't do the bring the stakeholders after you've decided, oh, I want to use this. Now you bring the stakeholders to say, oh, let's accept this. It doesn't work that way. And I really don't see how you're going to get that spot where they want to have that training to work. I think what they should do is go back to the drawing board, put together the fire chiefs have already put, we have a lot of work done. But they need to bring in other stakeholders to actually create where it's going to happen because, the town boards have to be involved in it. Wherever it's going to go, you can't just do it in this manner. So, I mean, I, for one, at this point, feel that this should be scrapped for a while until they come up with a method that we can actually, maybe a committee of the legislature can take a look at it and bring them in and actually work through this to get to the right spot. But we do need this type of training. No matter how you look at it, we need this type of training.
Mm-hmm.
So I get you there.
Thank you. So you made a motion to adjourn?
I'll make a motion to adjourn.
Second.
Okay, all in favor? Aye.